You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Another email. Oh, he lives. The gunner joins me. What have you been doing all morning, man? What is going on with you?
I hate my fucking phone, man. I swear to God.
What is your deal? Like, you can't track anybody down this morning. You're looking for people. Like, what's the deal?
Well,
what's going on?
I talked to Billy, and do you know Joe Russell?
I don't know Joe Russell.
He's Mets chief of staff now.
Oh. He's a big timer then.
Yeah, well, according to him, no. We were laughing about it because I said, "Oh, big leagues now." He goes, "Yeah, big league ends at the door frame of my office."
Right. So, let me just tell you, when the Mets chief of staff calls, people take that call, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They take that call. Yeah, so Mike's looking for people at the division, and they're all out at parade practice, man. You know that. Come on. This is what they're doing.
Okay.
I used to love parade practice. It was a it was a comedy. Come on, you stand there and laugh your ass off most of the time. People getting yelled at. The adjutant doesn't walk right. He doesn't yell right. Public humiliation. It's one of the better things the Marine Corps does.
Well, today, trying to get a hold of him reminded me how just ridiculous people are in the Marine Corps. You call the staff duty at division, and he doesn't know what the hell's going on. You know, and it's like, we're crying out loud, guys. You know, so I'm trying to help them. Like, hey, go upstairs, you know, go down the hallway, third door on your left is the aide's office. Okay, sure, hang on. You know, and well, he's, the aide's up, he can't. And I'm like, right, sure. That's what I told Billy. When I got to call Billy today. And Billy's director of command staff.
Yeah, tell everybody who Billy is.
Billy McCullough is a colonel in the Marine Corps, and he's one of the finest. He's one of the best leaders, one of the best thinkers. Calm, cool. I mean, just an all around great guy. And he's now a director of command staff. He was the regimental commander, the first Marines, as we just say, the regiment.
The regiment, yeah. Exactly.
The regiment. Everybody knows what the regiment is. You know, there's 5th Marine Regiment and 7th Marine Regiment, and then there's the regiment. That's the 1st Marine Regiment. The regiment. And Billy laughed about that. He's like, yeah, you're right. I said, I called there, and I was talking to the duty downstairs, and I said, hey, go upstairs and go see if the gunner's in, because that's what I need to talk to. The gunner's not in, sir. Okay. Who's in? Well, I'm from, you know, I don't know. Okay, across from the gunner's office, the XO's office. See him? No. To the left, go down the hallway and first door on the right from the XO's CO. Is he in? No. The CO's not in at 7 in the morning? And he goes, well, I think he's PT'ing. I said, bullshit. Don't cover for them. Don't cover for him. And Chris Gideon is the CO of the regiment right now. Right. Another great guy.
Right. Another student of mine.
Yeah, so I left a message that old Chris, when he gets in the office, he's going to be like, damn, Connor.
Exactly. Exactly. Getting said he'd come on. He actually spoke at the Dana Point Marine Corps birthday event, and Luke called me and said, hey, man, go to this thing with me. So he and I walk in.
Yeah.
Here's Giddings, one of my lieutenants from IOC. Now he's a regimental commander. So we talk before he speaks. I said, just so you know, I'll be grading you. He starts laughing. He says, come on, man, don't make me nervous. I said, no, Giddings, I know what a turd you are, okay? And he starts laughing, and he goes, now I'm going to be nervous. I said, hey, trust me, I'm going to be taking notes. And it was actually, it was awesome. It was a great event in Dana Point.
Was Billy one of your students too?
No, I think he was there. He was there. You know what? I think he might have had to have been, because if he was before Giddings was there right before I left.
Billy was there before Chris was.
Yeah, so he would have been one of my students, because at the high end would have been the first class that I put through at IOC was Roger Turner,
right.
Who's now a brigadier general, and Giddings would have been on the backside of that. So so McCullough, Billy McCullough, and Mike's on first name basis all these dudes, because Mike's like his own dude.
Right,
he's his own. He's his own entity. It's the way it is.
I left a message for Eric because he's taking over the division.
Okay, tell everybody who you're talking about. Eric Smith.
Eric Smith. He's now the commanding general for 1st Marine Division.
Right. And, well, so he will be.
My message for Eric was
he will be tomorrow.
Eric's an East Coast guy.
He will be.
You
know, he will be tomorrow. The change of command ceremony is tomorrow. If you were out here, you'd go. It'll be a little bit of a reunion, because when we were, when Mike and I were in Ramadi in 2004, Dan O'Donohue, who was a lieutenant colonel at the time, but, General Mattis brought him over to be, what was called the effects cell. And they did analysis on our operations. And O'Donohue's a smart dude. And then Eric.
Yeah, he's the brain.
He's a brain. And then Eric Smith was in current operations and was wounded not too long after we got there. He got a gunshot through and through his calf in an ambush. And again, this is the randomness of life, right? I can't remember who the intel guy that was there, but he reaches up to grab the back of Smith's seat to try to get out of the Humvee that's getting fired up before the day of up armored Humvee, right? So you have rounds blowing through the Humvee. He gets around through and through the palm of his right hand as he reached up to kind of swing himself out of the vehicle. It goes through his hand, but misses Smith's head. Smith gets one through and through one of his calves, and they stumble out and fight in this ambush.
The deuce would have been George, big guy. George, I can't remember what his name is now. Larger in life kind of personality.
No, the deuce would have been Mike Grunwald. Grunwald?
Was it Grummel?
Yep.
And I thought it was
No, George. No, George didn't come till later. George McMap.
What's George's last name?
McMap.
No.
Yes.
He did the martial arts stuff, but what's his last name?
I can't remember.
Yeah, he was the big fighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, he didn't, but Mike, is it Grunwald? It's Mike Grone. Grone! Yeah, this guy was one of the deputies. And they were out, they were out doing something, and normally General Matt, they might have been with the CG, because General Mattis normally took somebody, when he went, he'd take somebody from the four, the three, the two, they'd go with them.
It wasn't Mike Grone. Mike Grone's an aviator.
No, stop it. Mike Grone is an intel guy. I talked to Mike Grone one day. He's now a brigadier general, but Mike and General Mattis loved him. I told Mike Grone, you could tell the CG anything and he'll believe it. Tell him that the Iraqis in Ramadi are fired up because there's a rumor going around that the women in Ramadi have have gonorrhea because of the Marines. And I said, Mike, I swear to God, the CG will look at you and go, got it, Mike. He won't even ask you a question. And he looked at me. I said, come on, man. Just have a little fun with it. Just see. I said, look, I'll bet you a dollar. He just says, got it. And you go on to the next thing. Where other people could say, the sun will be in the sky today. And General Miles would say, why do you believe that?
Yeah.
If you got on his bad side for whatever reason, you do.
You have proof of that?
There was no coming back.
Right. Have you had Eric on the show yet? No, you haven't.
Yes, I had him on. Well, I've had him on when he was the in Ramadi in 2005. He, Mike, I should play part of. I'll send you the link to this when you have a chance. You need to listen to it because he says, hey, look, if you don't believe that we're over here fighting for freedom and this nation to define what it wants to be, he said, then I have 100, I have 1,000, I have 1,100 guys that'll come to wherever you are and kick your ass. And he talks about, it's an awesome interview because they're in the middle of fighting and so, but I will tell you that this is a little bit of testament of, it's almost like the Coconut Grove boys from World War II that then go on to run the Marine Corps for a long time. And Mike can tell you, the group of Marines in Ramadi, pretty big time stuff around the world right now.
Right.
It was an incredible group. Joining us from the state of Florida is he wasn't actually in Ramadi, he was out west. He's now known as Florida Man, Will Cosentini. Will, what's going on? Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't think I was going to get put on.
Well, no. Well, your boy Musselman's on. Why, you don't want to be on? You don't want to talk to Mike?
No. The problem is you can't get a word in sideways with him. So.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, don't be a baby about it. Suck it up. You know all these guys that we're talking about. Mike Groen, Eric Smith, Dan O'Donohue. Pretty exceptional group that was in Al Anbar in 2004. Yay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't listened for the last 10 minutes. I was actually dealing with a guy that may or may not hire me, so that took precedence over you, believe it or not.
Sorry.
And you haven't, I'm sure you probably haven't even listed them all off. I mean, Sam Mundy, who else was out there? I mean, what, half those battalion commanders are GOs now?
Right. Right. Kennedy. Yeah. Kennedy at Mikrik. Furness is in Africa now. Was there. Nicholson. Nicholson was a P-1.
Years later.
Yeah, he was a P-1 colonel, but he was at the G-3, late in the summer and then got blown up and then went back, with the 5th Marine Regiment.
He was in 1st Marines, was at ISC with you.
Tulin, CO, and then Sparky was the OPSO.
So it was during the march up.
Oh.
Lou,
Craparata.
Craparata.
Lou.
Was during the march up.
He's one meth. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had General Miller, who was Colonel Miller at the time. He came ashore out where you were, right? And then you guys came in to Fallujah. Yes.
No, we were actually going out. We met them in Kuwait. They were going north. We were coming south.
Okay. All right. That's right.
Right.
They were there for the second event. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They were second Fallujah. I mean, Brian McCoy, the best guy to never make VG in my time in the Marine Corps. So.
Yeah, I didn't know him, but
he probably left right before you got there, right as you were getting there.
No, he was there.
He had gone to Okinawa.
He was there when I But it's, you know, it's just like, you know, it's interesting that, that somebody will bring up a name, like Mike talks about Billy McCoy. I never met, other than probably teaching him at IOC, Brian McCoy. I never crossed paths with him professionally as opposed to some of these other guys, that we crossed paths with. So, I want to ask if I can change to, from Coconut Grove Boys talk to something else.
What?
Well, hold on. Will was the, worked for the CG. Did General Mattis like you or not like you, Will?
You know, I had.
Okay,
late.
Let me just tell you this. If you hesitate, then that means he didn't hate you. Okay, maybe you were in the middle, but if he didn't like you, you would not have taken that long to answer that question.
Right. There was obviously at least one that I can think of, battalion commander, who he absolutely did not like. I think there were a few that had been with him, you know, and then there was a bunch of us, I would say, sort of in the middle that on any given day you'd rip your ass or pat you on the head. And you know, and maybe that's the way it was for everyone. I don't know. I tried not to be overly concerned about it, but that's probably false bravado on my part.
Yeah, I remember.
But life was easier when General Mattis liked you.
Oh.
You're right. I remember watching the public gutting field dressing sessions when people he didn't care for, and man, oh.
Hey, I'll tell you a funny story about.
No, let me tell you. Here's the worst thing I had going for me.
What?
You know who my biggest fan was in the CP?
Dunford.
It's George Bristol.
Oh.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
If George is on your side, that's not necessarily helpful.
No.
I mean, it made me feel good, but it doesn't help you with the boss.
No. And Bristol came in and replaced the aforementioned Mike Groen. And so you sat there every day, and so we've all been there 7 months. And Bristol comes in, and he's trying to learn how to pronounce the names, right? And
right.
And then
describe Bristol. Describe him.
Gigantor. Okay.
Yeah.
Gigantor.
Hector Midhand.
Yeah.
Bristol.
And I'm not sure why, but he and General Mattis, not so much. And it was not. It was not a good thing. So if he was your advocate, bro, no, it was a good thing that you were out on the edge of the planet. But Kennedy, Paul Kennedy. Who we all know, he's across the river in Ramadi, and they're getting ready to do a raid, and General Mattis had scheduled, you know, he was going to go do battlefield circulation in Ramadi with, you know, over at Hurricane Point and wherever. It was not going to be a big deal. So, Kennedy, they're going to be in, you know, doing rock drills and getting ready all day. So he has his opso call over and tell, the CG's aide, who will remain nameless, he says, hey, just make sure the CG knows that we're going to be tied up. You know, we're not going to be able to stop for him, you know, but he's welcome, blah, 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 blah. Got it. So the A walks in and says, hey, sir, 2-4 really doesn't want you over there today. so Mattis calls over to Kennedy, who's out, right, out as part of this rock drill. They take a message, right, and the message says, I don't go where I'm not wanted, right? Mattis, right? So whoever takes the message writes it down and walks it out and hand delivers it to Kennedy sitting there, right, watching the drill. And Kennedy opens up, right, and the blood, like, drains out of his head, like, oh, oh, no. And so at a break, he calls over, buddy, what's going on over there? I'm like, nothing. Why? What's going on? He goes, I've got this message. The CG's going to have my head. What did that son of a bitch say to him? He said, I don't know. Let me go find out. So I come back, and I said, hey, here's what he said. He goes, you tell him I'm going to have his head on a stick. Because if Mattis hates me, I'm done. Do you understand? It's over. I said, buddy, don't worry about it. You've got the Irish Mafia over here. You've got Kelly. You've got Dunford. They love you. Nothing's going to happen. Take it like a man and shut up. He's like, you're next, too. You're next, too. If I pay, everybody's going down. I'm like, I'm already down. You can't do anything to me, so good luck. Click. He calls back. He goes, hey, has the CG said anything? I'm like, no, quit being a chick, man. Knock it off. Oh, man, but it was funny. It was funny.
Hey, what was Knapp's first name?
Bob Knapp.
Bob Knapp.
Yeah. Bob and Knapp and John Kelly were rack mates at OCS. How about that?
Let me tell you a Knapp story.
Okay, hold on. Just so everybody, Knapp replaces the Kelly. Both Kelly's sons are going to be in Iraq. Kelly tries to stretch out being the assistant division commander, except Dunford's going to put on a star and assume the job as assistant division commander. So Kelly gets to hang out, I think, till both of his sons got in country, and he was there for about a week while they were both there, took some pictures, and then Kelly leaves. Dunford went home on leave, skipped general officer school, because he's like that, and then came back, and he became the assistant division commander. Bob Knapp comes over as the chief of staff. And
right.
And he looks like Uncle Festus on, is it Festus or Fester?
Fester.
Festus is on Gunsmoke. Fester on the Addams Family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It literally looks like
but,
him. But,
but, not as, but not as lively.
Not as lively. And but let me tell you this. He could chew some ass. He.
Yeah. So
I liked him.
Here's a great one. So we get relieved by 3rd LAR. We drove down, and our vehicles were going back. So we had to go to that Army camp in Kuwait to do a washdown. And, you know, you show up, and you're driving all freaking day to get down there, and it's 2000. And they give you the brief, and they say, start washing. And I said, no. We'll start washing tomorrow. Well, you got to get it done. How long is it going to take? I don't know, but the next unit's be here in 4 days. We'll be done. So we get on the wash racks the next day. Day after that, I get called in to there's some colonel who's the boss there and says, hey, the Marines down here look like hell and they're not saluting people. I was like, sir, you gotta be kidding me. I said, if you want to go walk out and not get saluted, just walk around with me. And the Marines are dirty because they're the only people on the base working. And so we walk out. And the guy says, so the next thing I hear is a call from Bob Knapp. Like, what the hell did you say to that guy? And I told him what we're doing. By that time, we're actually done with the washdown and all is done. And the report I got back is that Knapp sandblasted this guy.
Whoa.
From somewhere up at Blue Diamond, the telephone. And I hardly knew Knapp, but he is one of my all-time heroes for just cutting through. You know, those people in Kuwait were, I was disgusting.
Oh no! Let me tell you, but Will's guys, they were orange. They look like spacemen. I mean, because of the
we went down there. We washed down for I don't know a day and a half. Then I lined them up at the barber shop.
Right.
Then we lined up in a battalion formation. I said, "Bring all your utilities and boots out." We filled two dumpsters of utilities that I wouldn't let them take home, and boots. We issued them a new set. And we hung out for a week at the chow hall.
Right. Oh, but let me tell you.
I had guys that hadn't seen a chow hall in, you know, the entire 7 months. And
this is a good part about my job. So I'm doing something, whatever. And Knapp is on the phone, like, yep, got it, okay. All right, and they did what? And so he gets off the phone, and he goes, and he comes on the corner of this partition, and I worked on the other side. And he says, I said, what's going on, sir? And he goes, oh, I just got an earful about 1st LAR down in Kuwait. And I know it's Vito, right? It's Will. And I said, what'd they do? And you never know if somebody gets shot and, you know, whatever. And you know, I knew they were leaving and they'd just been fighting and hooking and jabbing for 7 months and living in the dirt. And so he says, oh, they're not saluting and stuff like that. I said, you got to be shitting me. And he said, no. He said, can you get Cosentini, how I can find him? I said, yeah, I'll track him down. And I said, hey, sir, just so you know, I said, Will is good to go. They're tight. And he says, I've never met him. And I said, I worked with him at the basic school. And I said, those guys have been all over the place, and they've been great. I said, he's good. I'll get you his phone number. Now, did you not talk to him before he called that? You talked to him before he called that dude back, right?
I don't know. I talked to him, and then I think he called the guy back.
Oh, he ripped this guy's ass, too. It was awesome. After he did it, he came around the partition. You know, he fixed his shoulder holster like he's a man. I'm like, that was pretty awesome, sir. He goes, that guy's bullshit. That guy's bullshit. It was awesome, though. But Will's guys look like something out of Mad Max Thunderdome in their orange uniforms. Like, who are those guys? It was cool.
Yeah.
It was good stuff, though. No, but I'll tell you what, that group, that was a good group of Marines. All right, I got a question, an essay question for each one of you. I'm lamenting as I look into the future that we're all going to go the way of Illinois. So to each one of you, right, and Vito, you can go first. If gunshot wounds or attempts don't phase congressmen, either rhetorically or in terms of their ability to compromise and do the right thing, what happens to the nation?
Yeah, I mean a couple of things. If you look very closely at the history of how we were founded, why we were founded, this is really what the founders wanted. They wanted things to be complicated. What they didn't envision, though, was a welfare state. And that's not a pejorative. It's a fact. You know,
right.
Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, those are things associated with a classic welfare state. And everyone has great intentions when we start them, but now those things are going to eat the budget. You know, people were talking earlier about food stamps. Oh, shit. That's chump change.
Right.
20 years from now, it's service on the debt, it's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and that's it. There's no DOD, there's no nothing. I'm sure in the history of the world there's been things like, you know, the debt that we're getting to. You know, we had a huge debt after World War II, pretty good reason to have that debt. But nobody really knows. And you see the masters of the universe now, at the Federal Reserve and all the bond traders, they have no idea.
Right.
Right? All the classic indicators are telling you that as you raise interest rates this way, something should be going that way, and it hasn't worked for the last 6 or 7 years. The idea that congressmen are going to get together, they can't, because the country is divided. It's not Congress's fault. It's our fault. We're a what, a 45, 45, and 10% country. So, you know, through modern data searches, we've gerrymandered ourselves. You know, there's no competitive districts out there, which means you don't have to talk to people and win them over. And the presidency comes in, and we've shown over time that we're willing to forego things that we know are the right thing. For example, you know, President Obama had a complete Democratic Congress for 2 years, put through major social legislation, Obamacare, and never bothered to attempt a compromise. And he said, I won. I don't have to compromise. That's a dangerous thing to do. And I hope that, you know, some of the dysfunction you see in the Republican Party now is people say, oh, we sent them up there not doing what we said. Well, I think that some of them are trying to do the right thing and compromise, and the Republican caucus is not as nearly as unified as the Democratic caucus has been. The Democrats have actually purged, you know, center moderate Democrats. There are none. There's no pro-life Democrats. There's none of that.
Right.
I'm hoping that the president doesn't allow, you know, media calls, oh, the first 100 days you didn't get anything done, you didn't get anything. I hope that they're going to go and attempt to compromise. I don't think it helps when he says, hey, look, we could have the best health care ever and no Democrats would vote for it. I fear he might be right, but it's not helpful to do that. when you're in charge and you own everything, now's the time for you to compromise for the good of everyone. If he gets a bill that all Republicans are happy with, we're in trouble, right? Just like when Obama got a bill that all the Democrats are happy with. We're in trouble. It's not good. You know, I would say one thing that we don't want to do, violence, is it's interesting and it's all fun and games. But I was in Sarajevo in January of 96. You know, they'd hosted the Olympics 12 years before that. It's a modern, you know, communist-dominated city behind the Iron Curtain, came out, whatever. But it has all the, it looks like a modern city. And people were dying of tetanus in it because they had gone to a civil war. And this country couldn't sustain that. There's, Gunner, help me with my stats, 400 million guns in the hands of private citizens. This country cannot sustain violence, and people are playing where they shouldn't play. So anyone who thinks they know how this is going to turn out in terms of fiscally, they're out of their fucking mind. They have no idea.
Okay, hold on. All right. Mike, how does this turn out?
Okay, are we talking about news?
No.
You got to fill me in a little bit.
No, we're talking about the nation. How does the nation get out of this ditch? What changes so that we can get compromised legislation that's in the best interest of the American people, that we can get a DOD budget through? What changes, or do we go down the road that Illinois has gone down, which is the road of outspending your assets, and you just do that, and you play the shell game. Sequestration is how we do budgeting, and then ultimately this thing goes in the ditch, and then somehow we reform it. What changes in the future?
Well, let's pretend that I'm John Quincy Adams, you're Benjamin Franklin, and Will's pick one of the other people, and we're having this conversation of how do we get out of a tyranny government. So,
uh-oh.
I mean, what changes? Nothing changes. It's the status quo. You're asking a question of, okay, here's the honest answer. We take it back. Because when we say, oh, we can put the right people in office and we can do this and we can vote and we can do all those power things, they're not working. Our government continues to still not listen and spend and spend and spend and increases us further in debt, keeps leveling the bill onto us, and we're not satisfied. I mean, when was the last time we were satisfied with government? Can you remember a time?
Well, I mean, at least when you passed budgets, right? And you know, I think when we did things like that, that's at least functioning as a functioning government.
We have corrupt politicians. We have the whole establishment in Washington, D.C. is just bad. I mean, nothing good comes from that area.
Wow.
I mean, there's some good guys. But in order to your answer to your question is, how do we fix it? We take it back.
Wow. All right, Will?
They think about it, too, though, is you're concerned about it because, you know, you pay attention. I've been unemployed for a few months, so my interaction with my fellow citizens has been somewhat limited. But I don't think at the place I used to work, there isn't anybody who knew what was happening in Syria. What's sequestration? You know, I talked to people inside the building. I remember having a conversation with a woman who's probably 40. We were talking about debt, and I said, Caroline, you know, you're not going to retire for 25 years. What's your plan?
Right.
Oh, I have my pension and Social Security. So you're not going to have Social Security in 25 years, right? It's bankrupt. And if the government's bankrupt, why do you think they're going to pay your pension? She said, well, they have to pay my Social Security. I paid in. Caroline, you understand how upside down we are. In 25 years from now, this is probably in 2010 or 11, 2035, nobody's predicting Social Security. is going to be solved in 2035. So this is a woman that worked for a pretty powerful guy who's still in the building in a very powerful position. She wasn't stupid, college educated, thoughtful, dealt with the public a lot, et cetera, and had no idea. The country has no idea.
Okay, and that's certainly a component of it. That thing is a component of how you get to a state of. It's been interesting. I started reading about Illinois here earlier in the week, and it's astounding, right? Their public unions, their entitlements, and now all the revenue they have that they're generating as a state is going to pay court-ordered payments that they have to make.
And yeah, Mac, how upside down is the Jacksonville City pension? Throw a number out.
If it's good, it'll be near 70% funded.
Yeah, but it's upside down by how much? How deficient is it?
The Jacksonville, Florida city pension. I don't know.
Yeah, 500,000-600,000 citizens, no. Whatever.
Okay, 500,000-600,000 citizens, and let's just say it's 50% funded, 30 million. I would say that's another five times, 150 million. I would say probably 200 million plus.
It's almost 2 billion upside down for a
dumpy
little city in North Florida.
NFL
level city.
1.8 billion.
Really?
Almost 2 billion upside down.
There are bombs
all over this country.
No, let me tell you, if you want to do some interesting reading, Just do a search on unfunded pension liabilities, public unfunded pension liabilities across the country, and your jaw will hit the floor. Now, for two reasons.
And it's unions.
Right,
it's unions.
Yeah.
Trust me. Look, yeah. You'll love this. I'm running for mayor in North Dakota. The head of the police union comes to me and says, "Hey, we want to go from a defined contribution plan, a 401k plan, to a defined benefit plan, which is a big deal." Okay, the cost of the city was going to be about $400,000, and I said, "Look, I'll talk to you about it. What do you want to concede, you know, to help the city pay for it?" And he looked at me and said, "Nothing." My opponent, the mayor,
you were crazy.
The mayor said he'll do it. You know, he'll do it out of the general fund. I said, Do you want to open up like labor negotiations? He said no. And I said, yeah, I won't support that. How do I support that? And he said, well, just so you know, if you won't support that, then we're going to campaign against you. And I said, go ahead. But that's what they do to politicians. So you wonder, how does a police officer or a firefighter retire at 95% of his of the highest
95% of their last right
of their
so in their last year they're on overtime for the entire year.
Yeah.
And so they retire at 50 years old and make 125% of what they've been making.
Right. Right. And then many of them, what they do is they retire and then they go back to work for the police department, right? In a as a 1099 employee making $100,000 a year. It's ridiculous. And how do you keep paying this shit? It's amazing. And it's like, so how do you afford this? But again, we're incapable of taking the hard steps, you know, to keep it out of the ditch. So to me, the only way it reforms itself, the only way Stockton is saved is by a judge. So it's allowed to go into the ditch, file for bankruptcy, and then a judge says, what they did with the, you know, we were talking about it yesterday, with the United Airlines, I think it was, when they filed for bankruptcy, they looked at the pilots and said, look, you can either have 30% or I will liquidate this now and we'll divide it up and I'll send you a check. What do you want to do? And because it wasn't there. And that's what all these different communities are heading for once they go bankrupt, because our elected officials, and again, Vito, I don't agree with you that it's, yeah, we're a nation divided, but when you put your hand up and you go there, the reason you can't compromise is because you want to get reelected.
Right, yeah.
And well, so at some point you got to do the right thing for the country. And for whatever reason,
yeah,
whether
look,
it's the way we do elections or campaign fundraising, however we do it, they can't go there and do that. And I know the media has a hand in it, too, but so it leaves me asking the question that I posed to you two. What saves us? Nothing? And I don't think anything
well,
does.
There's a little bit of structural thing that can be done in regards to public service, public sector union. Not anymore. And those are the things that are driving communities and states bankrupt. Public sector union.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. Amazing.
The unionization has gone down some,
that.
But public sector union has gone up dramatically. You know, the second thing is, when GM went bankrupt, you know, what did the administration do? They skipped over the bondholders, and they gave the money to the union. Bondholders are less likely. Hey, if we burn a bunch of bondholders, maybe they will force communities and states, look, if they're not going to buy your bonds, without reform,
right.
I just the problem is a lot of the money at that level is very progressive. You know, people think Wall Street's a Republican thing. That's a complete falsehood. And I probably disagree with you about campaign money, et cetera. I don't personally believe that corporations should be able to contribute, but individuals should be able to spend whatever they want to spend.
Let me tell you, I would have to think about that. I agree with you on corporations. When the Supreme Court decided that the corporation had the same legal standing relative to campaign contributions, I was thinking, you've got to be kidding me. How is my voice ever going to be heard as an American citizen again when Pfizer has the same legal standing as Mike McNamara? Come on, man. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And so I don't get that, and to me it tilts the scale.
Did you pick up on when Dunford was talking at the press club? When Dunford was talking at the press club and someone asked him sort of a snide question about Trump, and he said, you know, listen, I believe in freedom of the press. And I've heard that from him, and he made me even more in that way. Yeah, and the idea that, you know, the press is rabid now, et cetera. Again, read about the press in 1780 if you want to see rabid. But that freedom to be able to say what you think and put your resources behind what you think, we should never restrict for an individual, for a citizen. Overseas money has no place in American elections. The corporations, I have a hard time with that as well.
Right.
But as a citizen, I should be able to say anything I want.
No, I'm with
you. And support it in any way.
I'm with you. Mike's ready for pitchforks and torches, yes?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I am ready
to go.
Down in Texas, man, they're ready
Call
for
me
it, man.
When you need to go.
Part of the
where's the rally point?
Part of the for the militia. You guys, hey,
yeah,
you guys, you guys are both gun guys too. I say we just.
Well, we're not talking about guns. We're talking about pitchforks and torches.
I say we just use torches initially. You know.
No, Mac.
Yeah, just torches. Nope. No, we didn't. No, we just. We'll just have a march at night, right, down Pennsylvania Avenue with torches.
I used to say, if the public really knew what we were doing inside that building, the Pentagon parking lot would be filled with people with buckets of pine tar and set of mattresses. So if they really knew what went on inside that building.
All right, that'll do it for the day. What, Will, what do you got going the rest of the day? You still looking for jobs and any breaking news on the job front?
Yeah, I mean, I got one company is doing due diligence and references, and I got to send them a couple more references, and neither of you two would be included in that. and I'm going to Kansas City next week, I think, for a final round of interviews. So I think Limbaugh is going to come to an end here pretty soon.
Wow, wow. How about you, Mike? What do you got going?
For me?
Yeah.
Let's see. Nothing?
Where are you going to lunch?
Yucatan, Pakistan in Fort Worth.
What?
Yeah, pretty good place.
All right, we just lost Will for some reason. All right, man.
Yeah, Yucatan, Pakistan.
Yucatan, Pakistan?
Yucatan, like the Yucatan Peninsula down in Mexico.
Right.
Central America.
Right.
Pakistan.
Oh. Hey, who's
have a blend of foods.
Who's in?
They got the plantains and stuff, yeah.
Okay, sounds like fun. Who's in first place in the American League East?
That'd be the Red Sox.
Oh, that would not be the Red Sox, my friend.
Oh, or tonight, right
yeah.
now.
That would be the New York Yankees.
They're tied.
They're
tied for first place.
No, they're
point
not.
0.5 games up?
A half a game ahead. Okay, now,
yeah,
why didn't I get a text about that after I got a text announcing the Red Sox were in first place yesterday? Sole possession.
It's good. Max, we're still early. Still early. Hey, did you see that, though? I'm not an Astro fan, but, man, the Astros are cleaning the
Everybody. The best records in baseball right now belong to the Houston Astros, 49-24.
That's
great. Yeah, they are 25 games over 500. Next, the Los Angeles Dodgers, 47-26.
They're playing good ball.
Next is the Washington Nationals. And then you have a series of teams that have 39 or 40 wins. The Yankees and the Red Sox are there right there. Let's see. Who else is at 39? Milwaukee Brewers, bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
They have 39. The Colorado Rockies have 47 wins as well, as do the Arizona Diamondbacks have 45. The National League West is just annihilating, absolutely annihilating the National League. The wild card will come out of there, and pretty crazy. How about your Minnesota Twins? They're up there.
They're in second place,
game and a half behind Cleveland. You know, it's what's interesting. You know who I crossed paths with? Did you ever cross paths with a Marine officer? He'd have been a lieutenant. I think he was part of the 1st Marine Division at the time. And name is Nick Francona, Terry Francona's son.
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
I crossed paths with him here recently. And so, anyway. But he and I grew up the same way, so it's kind of interesting to talk to somebody who had similar life experience and then joined the Marine Corps. His dad.
And then also, you know, I had Gunnar Taglebu, who was a gunner. So there's another guy that was wronged by his constituent.
He was what?
Commissioner Taglebu.
Commissioner. No kidding.
His son is a gunner, Marine gunner.
Get out of town. That's
true.
One of the things that Nick Francona asked me, he asked me if I knew Sandy Alderson, if I had ever met him. I said, you know, he was out in Oakland. My dad had gone east by then. First the Reds, then the Red Sox in Cleveland, and I never really crossed paths. And then I was in the Marine Corps and wasn't really around that much when he was with the A's. But he was a rifle platoon commander in Vietnam, and then went to 8th and I, and then got out and got involved in Major League Baseball as well. Famous for Moneyball and things like that. I should get those on. Do you know Taglebu?
Yeah.
Get me his number. Would you give me his contact info?
Yeah.
He's a funny guy, man. Yeah, is he? Those are just kind of interesting. Well, you know, if he's a gunner, you got to be funny to be a gunner, I think, don't you? Or are there some gunners?
No. There's some gunners that have no sense of humor.
All right. What do you got going the rest of the day? Anything exciting?
Yucatan, Pakistan, and then going out. And we're having that big fundraiser July 7th for the Fallen Officer Recognition Day. It's July 7th in Texas now. It's recognized as take a moment to recognize fallen officers across the state of Texas and the United States, but that's mainly awesome. Here in Texas.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we're doing a big fundraiser, and we're doing a lot of things for that right now. Getting ready, we're winding up that. We're doing raffle and event tickets and, you know, meet and greeting.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, I'll let you know when to grab your torch. We're only doing torches, no pitchforks. Can't get
all right, the code word for grabbing the torches and the pitchforks and meet at the rally point is going to be pineapple.
Pineapple
is the code word for everything. When something's going bad, the running password is pineapple, pineapple, pineapple. Because you know why I said take pineapple, right?
No, why?
Because everybody thinks that the bursting bomb on my collar was a pineapple.
And so that was the running code word?
Yeah, so everybody thought it was literally everybody would say, well, why do you got a pineapple on your collar? Why do you got a black eye? I don't have a black eye.
That's funny. Oh, the president says today that he did not make and does not have recordings of conversation with ex-FBI Director Comey. Oh, well.
The president just said that?
Yeah, the president said that. Anyway. All right, Matt. Thanks for this.
I don't know if he's going to make 4 years.
He is. I think he's going to. Here's what I think. I think he's going to come out.
You're going to get impeached in this last 6 months.
I think what's going to happen is all this is they're going to find that there's no connection in the election. You know, you had Jay Johnson yesterday in front of the Senate Intelligence or the House Intelligence Committee saying, you know, the Clinton campaign was hacked, but they wouldn't turn over their server to us. And we were, you know, we're on their side, but a crime had been committed by the Russians. But, yeah, the Democratic Party said, yeah, we're not doing that. Hillary Clinton said, yeah, I'm not doing that. But he said there was no indication that there was any irregularities in voting. So I think ultimately what you're going to have is bad form on the part of the Trump administration, in particular bad form relative to Mike Flynn in terms of disclosures and contact, and then this narrative that got started that this Trump Russian narrative that we're at odds with Russia. So if there was any conspiracy,
hey, I'm going to come public. I'm going to go public. It was me, Mac.
It was you.
I was the one that had the contact with the Russians for the election. It was
nice.
Me.
I knew it.
I did it on my own.
Well, I knew it had to be. See? I knew it had to be some jackass. All right.
It was me. That's why I'm a big Vladimir Putin fan.
It's good to know, man. We appreciate it.
So, if Trump's listening right now,
you're off the hook.
It's on me.
You're off the hook.
Yep. Pin it on me.
All right, bud.
But just remember, I'm Oliver North. I need that pardon at the end of this.
Yeah. Hey, just make sure you dress up in your alphas when you're going to go plead your case.
Yeah.
It worked for him.
I will.
He did.
I'll put my alphas on at the congressional hearing.
He did all right, man. And then hold your hand high when you take the oath. Stand it with the physical attention. Don't slime into that. That's all part of it.
No, I know.
That's all part
of it. Have that. Parade attention. Stand at that position of attention and hold that hand high when I'm swearing the oath.
That's right. Me?
That makes it look even better.
Me? Politically nasty? No way. I'd never do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I could just hear it. You'd be awesome at it. All right, man. Have a good day.
I'll talk to her.
We're going to take a break. All Marine Radio on a Thursday wraps up next. I don't mean to be so negative. But I just don't. How do we get out of this? They can't stop it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.